Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling June 18th in the case of Homeland Security versus Regents of the University of California. It's probably not a case name with which you are familiar, but it's a ruling that impacted hundreds of thousands of young people. The court's 5-4 opinion in that case upheld the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. DACA temporarily defers deportation and allows dreamers to legally work in the U.S. Seven Flores grew up in Laredo as an undocumented immigrant from Mexico. Before DACA, he was always aware of the checkpoints north and south of the border city.
I remember feeling that I was almost trapped just in between the checkpoints.
DACA allowed him to venture beyond Laredo and attend college. He's now a graduate student at Boston University. Around 700,000 DACA recipients live, study, work, and raise families in the U.S. They're issued Social Security numbers. They pay taxes. They must pass criminal background checks. They cannot vote. They can't enroll in Medicaid or CHIP or purchase coverage through the Affordable Care Act marketplaces. Their status does not give them a path to citizenship. Dreamers collectively breathed a sigh of relief when the nation's high court opined that the Trump administration's argument for rescinding DACA was arbitrary and capricious. To dissect the decision and what comes next, our Democratic Congressman Joaquin Castro of San Antonio, chairman of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, and Thomas A. Sines, president and general counsel of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. Sines explains that the Supreme Court ruling reinstates the DACA program as it was put into place June 15, 2012, by the Obama administration.
DACA is an exercise of prosecutorial discretion by the Obama administration, basically determining that this group of immigrants, who are young people who came to the United States before the age of 16, are not enforcement priorities and should be provided with a deferral of any action to attempt to remove them from the country, and along with that should be provided with work authorization. As a result of DACA, we've had well over 500,000 young immigrants who've been able to take on employment as they continue their educations and when they finish with their education, and contribute to our economy in very, very important ways, including as teachers, including as healthcare providers, particularly important in the pandemic, in all kinds of essential positions for businesses across the country. The Trump administration, as you know, attempted to eliminate DACA, announcing that it believed the program to be unlawful, an unlawful exercise of the president's authority, and that it therefore would wind it down. Now, as a result of court action, it's remained in place at least so that those who already had received DACA could renew that deferral of any enforcement action and their work authorization. What the Supreme Court decided was that the reasoning given to end the program was insufficient, specifically that the Secretary of Homeland Security, or the acting secretary at the time, had failed to consider all of the policy considerations, relevant policy concerns tied to ending DACA. And in particular, the court majority identified a failure to separate work authorization from deferral of enforcement and consider the equities behind deferring enforcement, and a failure to consider the important reliance interests of those who had received DACA. The Trump administration was essentially told, you didn't do this the right way, and if you want to try to end this important DACA program, you've got to do it the right way.
And so, Congressman Castro, President Trump has said pretty frequently over the last 3 years that Congress needs to fix this. But any proposal that Congress makes to the president, it sometimes doesn't even get past the House, is promptly rejected by the president. Is there any sort of conversation happening right now between the White House and Congress in trying to accomplish something?
You know, we are always ready to engage the president and Mitch McConnell in conversation about what's possible with respect to protecting our dreamers. And, you know, it makes it tough, though, when the president uses immigrants as his number one political punching bag, because what it does is it sets a tone for many folks in his party, and they become fearful of making any kind of deal or compromise to protect dreamers. And that's where we are right now. The Democratic House of Representatives has passed H.R. 6, the Dream and Promise Act, that would put dreamers on a path to citizenship, but it's stalled in the Senate for over a year. The legislation is meant to, or first acknowledges the important role that dreamers and TPS holders have played in American society, and the fact that they have built roots here, have families here, and jobs here. And so it's an effort to protect them from deportation and put them on a path to citizenship. The Democratic House passed it over a year ago now, but we've been waiting for Mitch McConnell to take it up in Senate.
Well, I know that just this past week, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus sent letters to both President Trump and to Mitch McConnell. And we know that President Trump doesn't necessarily read many of the briefings that are put on his desk. So there might not be much of a chance that he will see that letter, but Mitch McConnell might. Can you tell us what was in those letters and what you would like for them to do to help push protections forward?
Yeah, we had almost, or actually over 100 signatories from the House of Representatives in the letter to Mitch McConnell asking him to take action on H.R. 6. This is an attempt after the court's decision to spur the Senate to take action. This is an issue where you've got upwards of 75% of the country, majorities of people in every ideology, conservative, liberal, independent, who agree with the idea of protecting dreamers. And so we're trying to do everything we can to press the Senate and the president to take action.
And so, Mr. Sines, there was some interesting language that I've been seeing repeated again and again by members of the media. And also, Congresswoman Veronica Escobar used this language in a statement that she put out after the judgment was released by the Supreme Court, that the argument made by the Trump administration was insufficient and arbitrary and capricious. Those two words, arbitrary and capricious, are the words that I'm seeing pretty frequently associated with this ruling. Can you explain why they chose to use those words?
Arbitrary and capricious is the standard set out in the law, the Administrative Procedures Act, under which the Supreme Court was ruling. So they did conclude that what the administration had done in giving only one explanation for why it was ending DACA, namely then Attorney General Sessions' wrong, in my view, conclusion that the program was not a lawful use of presidential authority. I think we should pause and think about that for a moment. This is an administration that asserts the broadest presidential authority imaginable, including diverting millions and millions of dollars away from where Congress directed them to an unnecessary wall. So this is an administration that has a very broad view of its power. But in this circumstance, then Attorney General Sessions stated that this was an unlawful use of presidential authority by President Obama in establishing DACA. Well, the Supreme Court concluded that was arbitrary and capricious because it didn't deal with all of the important policy considerations that should go into determining whether DACA continues or not. This is not the first time the administration has run into that arbitrary and capricious label for what it's done. I remind us that a year ago, in the case dealing with the citizenship question on the U.S. Census, where the Supreme Court said that Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce, had lied to the public about the reason for attempting to add a citizenship question, that too was a conclusion by the Supreme Court that it was an insufficient and arbitrary and capricious reason for taking administrative action.
We're talking with Thomas A. Sines, President and General Counsel of MALDEF, and Democratic Congressman Joaquin Castro of San Antonio, Chairman of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. When we come back, DACA recipients uncertain about what happens next might not have to wait long.
It's also quite likely that the presidential election will decide the final fate of DACA.
Stay tuned to Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Daniela Rojas is a DACA recipient. She's a graduate of the University of Texas and works for an Austin City Council member. She was pleased with the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision upholding DACA, but knows there's a long road ahead.
DACA is a great program, but it's just sort of like a Band-Aid on, you know, a problem that needs to actually be fixed.
President Trump tweeted after the ruling that he, quote, wanted to take care of DACA recipients better than the do-nothing Democrats, but for 2 years they refused to negotiate. They have abandoned DACA, end quote. The Democrats, in fact, have not abandoned DACA. The House of Representatives passed H.R. 6, the American Dream and Promise Act, in 2019. It shields dreamers and recipients of temporary protected status from deportation. It lays a path to citizenship. H.R. 6 has stalled in the Republican-controlled Senate. Why is it so difficult to pass a DREAM Act? We continue our conversation with Thomas A. Sines, President and General Counsel of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, and Democratic Congressman Joaquin Castro of San Antonio, Chairman of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Sines says theoretically there shouldn't be any obstacles to passing a DREAM Act. It has broad support nationwide across ideological lines.
I remind us that 10 years ago, we were on the verge of enacting the DREAM Act. The House had enacted it. It had gone to the Senate, and a majority of senators at that time, 10 years ago, were in support of the DREAM Act. The only thing that prevented it from going forward was a filibuster and the failure to acquire a supermajority of 60 necessary to break that filibuster. So the DREAM Act is something that is widely supported. I think the Trump administration certainly knows that, and really, the Supreme Court's decision is in line with a recognition that we need to do something to provide permanent relief and long-term permanency of this group of immigrants in the country.
When people think of a Clean DREAM Act, what they're referring to usually is the idea of not holding these young people's lives hostage to the kind of bargaining that you usually see in Washington, D.C. So in other words, don't try to trade their futures for a border wall, for example, where in order to get a Dream and Promise Act or a DREAM Act, you've got to commit $50 billion to President Trump's border wall. You know, again, this is something that a wide majority of the country agrees with. So we should be able to do it without having to horse trade on things that are highly controversial.
After the Supreme Court issued their ruling, the USCIS, that's the agency that's in charge of DACA applications, the deputy director for policy with the agency, said the Supreme Court decision has no basis in law. It delays the president's ability to end the illegal DACA amnesty program. This is coming from the agency that issues DACA renewals and DACA applications. I'm curious as to what your reaction is to that coming from the administration, from the agency that is actually helping DACA recipients earn these protections.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. And if that statement had come out 5 years ago, 10 years ago, we would be saying that that agency has gone rogue. But unfortunately, when it comes to the Trump administration, it's what we've come to expect. And that's why I think one of the priorities, if Joe Biden is elected president of the United States, one of his top priorities has to be appointing reformers at the Department of Homeland Security as cabinet secretary, as head of CBP, ICE, and USCIS.
Now, Mr. Sines, President Trump issued an executive order this past week that bans most work-related immigration. He says he wants to put Americans back to work. But it's obvious from that statement he does not consider DACA recipients to be Americans. Do you think that their work protections may, down the road, be sacrificed in order to put Americans back to work because of economic losses in this pandemic?
Well, there is no economic thinking behind the executive order that was issued. The simple fact is that immigrants contribute to our economy and create more jobs that can then be taken up by others. So the assertion that somehow closing our borders, as he's now attempting to do, would somehow boost employment is simply false. It's actually counterproductive. So that's the first point that we need to take into account here. It's another instance, very much like what the Supreme Court decided in this DACA decision, of the administration deciding based on knee-jerk nativism, anti-immigrant policymaking without considering the repercussions for the economy and for others. That's almost precisely what the court decided in rejecting the elimination of DACA. You didn't consider all of the implications of what you're doing. In fact, what they did there, as he has done in this executive order, is implement an anti-immigrant agenda, naked anti-immigrant sentiment with nothing else attached to it. It's clear that Donald Trump doesn't somehow see any immigrant, including DACA recipients, as having the same rights as citizens. That's simply false. Under our Constitution, the number of rights that we limit to citizens in this country is actually quite small. It's further true that he doesn't understand how important the contributions these immigrants and others are making on a daily basis. Maybe that's because he doesn't clearly get how significant this pandemic is, but there are dreamers who are in important and essential positions, delivering healthcare, delivering distance learning as teachers, ensuring that our economy continues to operate even as we take steps dictated by public health.
So we know that a lot of DACA recipients, a lot of dreamers around the country, they breathed a sigh of relief. They were very anxious knowing that this decision was going to come down. And I know many of them were actually surprised that the Supreme Court upheld the decision. I think most of us were expecting DACA to be rescinded and for us to be having a completely different conversation today. But obviously, they're going to have to hold their breath again, because now the Trump administration is going to come up with other ways to have the Supreme Court rule in their favor. And so, Mr. Sines, hypothetically, what kind of arguments could the Trump administration make that would sway the majority court?
I don't think that their next step has to do with arguments to the court. They've got to try to grapple with the policy concerns identified in this case, as well as others, before taking any steps to end DACA. Whether they're able to do that is an open question. This administration has not proven itself able to consider adequately policy concerns beyond a naked anti-immigrant agenda. That's why you saw the comments out of USCIS that you quoted earlier. This is an administration that's loaded up the agency that's supposed to provide benefits to immigrants, because that's what USCIS does. It's loaded up that agency with anti-immigrant ideologues who don't seem to be able to think much beyond their nativism. So the question is, can this administration put it together in a fairly short period of time before maybe a new administration, can they put it together to actually consider adequately, as directed by the court, the kinds of policy concerns that we would expect any government to consider before taking a major step like attempting to end DACA?
And I think it's also unlikely, and Thomas can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's also unlikely that the administration would be able to accomplish all of that before November, because even if they go through that administrative process again, it will be challenged in court once again. But it's also quite likely that the presidential election will decide the final fate of DACA. If President Trump is reelected, with the court's opinion, he basically has a blueprint for what he and his administration have to do to terminate DACA. And I suspect that he will go through that process if he comes into a second term. If Joe Biden is elected, then he has the ability to keep DACA in place while the Congress is negotiating a longer-term solution. And I'm confident that a President Biden would be part of that solution and pushing a solution rather than demonizing immigrants the way President Trump had.
Well, Mr. Sines, I saw in a statement that MALDEF released after the ruling came out that there was an amicus brief MALDEF filed in September 2019 on behalf of nearly two dozen DACA recipients. I understand that case is still ongoing because there's a separate case being filed by Texas and other states, correct?
There is a separate case. The state of Texas and just a small handful of other states have filed a challenge of their own, arguing that DACA was not lawfully implemented. That case is still pending. We'll be back before the judge in late July at the earliest. He's asked for reports in late July. and will then determine whether that case moves forward. I think there are some strong indications from the Supreme Court decision that the Texas case should not go forward. By the same token, unfortunately, the Texas Attorney General has been tenacious in his attempts to end these important initiatives, not just DACA, but previously the DAPA, D-A-P-A program that was announced by the Obama administration. The Texas AG has been tenacious in seeking to end those programs, failing to recognize how the state of Texas, with a huge population of immigrants who would be eligible for both DAPA and DACA, and all the contributions those folks are making to the state, he's put all of that aside and has been very aggressive. So we'll have to see what goes forward with that case. I do want to say, I think that the Congress member is exactly right. This is really something that's going to be decided in November, because I don't think the administration can get its act together with the associated court review in time to get anything in place before we know the results of the election. So we all knew that this was a critical election. It's even more critical from the vantage point of this important relief for Dreamers.
We've been speaking with Democratic Congressman Joaquin Castro of San Antonio, chairman of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, and Thomas A. Sines, president and general counsel of MALDEF. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Ben Henry is our podcast producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.